This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter Locus Aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Kelvin height to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Nick? Can you feel it?
It's working. I feel it.
How are you doing, Nick? I haven't talked to you in a long time. I'm so excited that net neutrality is gone because now you and I are going to take over the airwaves and we're going to throttle everybody with liberty. We're going to have kids working in the Bitcoin mines, and I'd have you in there, but now that you're 18, you're too old to be a worker, so now you're going to be a foreman, which means that you're going to sweat in there with the kids, but you're going to get an extra Satoshi per hour. And it used to be that an extra Satoshi didn't mean nothing, but heck, in a couple of years, that could be like a grand.
That's exactly right. No FCC, so that's all going to happen. No, I guess there is FCC, but they let it go.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, the FCC is still in there. It's missing a couple E's and an S. But anyway, so what's new and exciting in your world? What have you been up to? What have you been doing? What's going on?
The farm stuff keeps going. It's, what is new and exciting? I don't know if there's anything particularly new that since the last time I was on, but I'm still farming yaks, still
have any of your animals revolted?
No, not yet. Something happened recently.
Do the pigs still think that they're more equal than the other animals?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I keep them separated from everybody else, and I found that division is easier to keep my groups of animals under control.
Divide and conquer. Yeah, it works the same with humans too. I was thinking about this the other day. Somebody was complaining about all the division and how everybody needs to be unified and united and everything. I says, oh, okay, does that mean that you're going to drop your nonsensical beliefs and adopt my sensible beliefs? They're like, no, you're an idiot. I'm not adopting yours. Okay, then we're going to stay divided.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, his or her ideas are pure junk, because if they were any good, I would have adopted them for myself, and they'd be my ideas now. But anyway, so division isn't really a bad thing, because the alternative is a hive mind of stupidity. Unless everybody agrees with me.
Yeah, then we're all individuals still.
Yeah, so divide and conquer on the farm. Good for you.
Yeah, and that's working well. My borders are doing a lot better than they have, so that's been an improvement. There haven't been any emergencies on the farm, so...
Did you build a wall and make the yaks pay for it?
Make the yaks pay for it, yeah.
Well, technically they will, one way or another.
They actually will, yeah.
Yeah, you take it out of their hide. Yeah, that wall's going to cost several yak arms and legs. All right, quit laughing, talk.
I'm sorry. It was just a string of great ones up there another. I've got my electric fence going, and it actually doesn't cost too much, so the yaks won't be. I think these are leftover. My systems aren't as great as maybe Donald Trump's wall would be, but it works.
Now, if you have an electric fence, the Republicans are going to want one too.
That's right. Keep the coyotes out.
Oh, coyotes are a problem. There's a lot of them up here in northern Michigan. Fox, too. The wolves aren't as prevalent as they're made out to be, but, well, you have packs that will cover a lot of territory. And when I was up in the Porcupine Mountains last fall, there was a couple of known packs that live in that park there. I think there's two of them, and there's like, I don't know, maybe 16 wolves per pack, something like that. It's a fairly good size number. I went on this little tour where one of the park workers was giving an explanation of the difference between the fox and, or I'm sorry, the wolf and the coyote, and then talking about the coy wolves, where wolves and coyote have started mating with each other. Yeah, I'm sure that's got the alt-right all fired up over the race mixing. But they don't like that stuff. They want to keep white trashistan as pure as possible. But anyway, the the tour guide was explaining, you know, here's this, and you know, just all these different things, how to identify them at a distance, and their habits, feeding habits, and stuff like that. And I was kind of surprised that they might go possibly 2 weeks without eating, because they they go out, they hunt, and they're not like humans where they do three meals a day. Going a week without a meal is absolutely nothing strange to them. It's commonplace. And when they eat, they eat the fur and bone. They just woof everything down. And you'll see that in the the evidence that they leave behind later on.
Yeah, one of the craziest things that I think about wolves is that they at least this is what I hear. I've never seen a wolf kill. That they eat a lot of their prey from the. From the back end to the face, if they get that far. I thought that's like the worst way to die. I've just heard of a lot of times that that's how you find moose. They might be a little bit alive because the wolves just removed their back legs and ate some of their guts and then left them there. That's a pretty brutal way to die.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's only a couple areas here in the UP that have a moose population, which is Marquette and Newberry, which are both north. They're pretty close to Lake Superior. Marquette is right on Lake Superior. But those general areas have a good moose population up there. Not that there's a whole lot of moose, but for the area, it's a good sized population. It's not like Canada or Alaska where they just go walking around through the neighborhoods like deer do.
Yeah, I've been studying a little bit about coyotes, not very much, but there's this guy on Joe Rogan a while ago named Dan Flores, some biologist. He knows all about coyotes. And it's quite an interesting history about how they're not native to anywhere in the states but the Southwest, and then white settlers.
Don't mouse back at me, bro.
That's right. As white settlers came across, they killed the wolves, you know, and then the coyotes filled their role, and then now as wolves take back that territory that they used to have. They mix with the coyotes, and then they fight them back, and
they're taking back their country.
That's right. we don't have very many wolves here in Oregon, and there's been talk recently that the Department of Fish and Hogs has been planting them. There's conspiracy theories by the local farmers that think that the Department of Fish and Wildlife is releasing wolves nearby, and yeah, I wouldn't know about that. I hope not. But there's always that talk, and it's interesting. That's a huge thing with ranchers, is the wolves. And I get that as a rancher and as a farmer. I don't like losing my animals to anything.
Shoot, but shovel, and shut up.
That's right.
Not that I would ever do that, but that's basically the rule. The rule of thumb, the unwritten rule, is what they talk about. They... Mm-hmm. There's discussion of wolves being released here in Michigan. I think Department of Fish and Hogs, or maybe the federal Fish and Hogs people do the releasing, and they, you know, they'll do their press release. Yeah, we released all these beautiful animals, and next thing you know, ranchers are locking and loading the rifle and getting ready. My understanding, though, is the ones that have been released in Michigan are a larger breed, which is probably more suited for dealing with the moose population in areas where they don't have moose, and where the main feed for the main prey for the coyote or for the wolves is deer, is usually a smaller breed. But my understanding is that a larger breed was released, and they have a tendency to form into these super packs, which gobble up food left and right, so I eat a whole lot more. So kind of like political super PACs, they gobble up a lot of resources and lead to a lot of death. But anyway, but yeah, as far as coyotes go, those are all over the state now. Those are darn near as common as rabbit or squirrels. I mean, there's coyotes living in the city of Detroit. Well, there's a lot of wildlife living there now, particularly since most of it is overgrown and it looks like Chernobyl, but without the radiation.
How well is it going? As I don't hear anything about Detroit except that property is still cheap.
Yeah, I don't really follow it too closely anymore now that I'm out of the failed state project.
Yeah.
And not living in the area. I think it's the usual nonsense. I think government is the local government is working as the progress removal service. I think that the Department of Rules, Regulations, and bothering business owners is going full force and creating more barriers to entry and barriers to staying in the race and just doing everything that they can to crush capitalism like the commie scumbags that they are.
Yeah, sounds typical of a local government. Yeah, especially a city like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was talking about this earlier today with some colleagues. There's a local group that I go to, and it's talk about homeless stuff. And the local clergy association got a church or they got a wintertime shelter program going, and it took them a year to get permission to help people, which I personally find is ridiculous. It's absolutely nuts. But what's really beautiful is when you hear a lot of people complaining about, oh my God, the government's cutting funding for this stupid program here, but everybody's picking up the slack for it because they're focusing on community rather than on government and political activism and begging.
Yeah.
So it's all working out. There's been a lot of significant donations that have gone in, and the clergy association hasn't had to do any real fundraising. They've done enough off of the soft donations, as they call it. But we were talking about all the different barriers to entry for starting businesses and the unemployment rate isn't horrible up here, but I think it could probably go to zero if there were fewer restrictions on starting up businesses. Wait, we'll be back and we'll talk a little bit more about how government is the department of making everything ungood.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Nick.
Hey.
So, I recently put up a Facebook post, and it created a lot of discussion, and I really want to talk about it because it's really quite positive, and it's one of the things that does create a lot of optimism for me, and a lot of other people have shared it too. I've talked in the past here on the show about a woman who used YouTube tutorials to build a house. She was a single woman, fresh out of a bad marriage or relationship, 5 kids, most of them were pretty darn young, a couple of them were early teenagers, but watching the YouTube videos, she was able to gain the knowledge and experience that was necessary for her to build a 3,500 square foot house. And she did it all. She did it all except for either the HVAC or the electrical. And I want to say it was the HVAC that she had somebody else do. Because if it were me, I probably would have felt comfortable with the HVAC, but the electrical, I'd want somebody else to get in there because, well, I just don't want to go mess around with electricity like that because, yeah, it's a good way to get zapped. But anyway, so what I did was nowhere near quite as much of a feat, but nevertheless, I'm really impressed with it. And I'm going to read my post here, and I'll share some of the comments too. I recently did a brake job on my truck. I replaced the pads and rotors all the way around and changed out a caliper. I can't even remember the last time I messed with brakes. It's absolutely no less than 10 years and probably a lot longer. And the reason for that is most of the vehicles I've had over the past 10 years or so, I've only had for a couple of years, and brakes just hasn't been a problem. It's not something that's come up. I've had to get new tires on all the vehicles, but brakes wasn't anything that I had to mess with. So anyway, but thanks to the magic of YouTube, I was able to watch how-to videos with helpful hints. I spent a couple hours at the most searching for and watching the videos before I started. They listed the tools and supplies that I would need. Those items were even listed in Amazon links in the notes section. I used a portable device to do the job step by step. I have this little Amazon Fire Kindle 11, and the protective case that comes with it, it's got like a little flip open thing that covers the screen. Well, there's a magnet in there, which is what keeps it closed, but you can use that magnet to attach the Kindle to your refrigerator or the fender of a vehicle. So here I am with my head stuck in the wheel well, and I got the Kindle right above it on the fender, so I'm able to watch the particular thing and then hit pause, do what I got to do, and then start it up again and go to the next section. And I have my little Bluetooth device, so it was, because the speakers on it aren't really that loud on its own. Not when you got like a propane heater going out there. But the thing is, I was able to do this, and the dealership wanted like $750 to do all four brakes in the caliper. That's a lot of money.
That is.
I think my cost for the parts was maybe around $350, between $300 and $350, somewhere in there. Now I did buy a bunch of extra tools, and I don't really consider that a cost of the project, because I'm going to use those for other things down the road. Unless you're buying a tool that's only going to be used one time, I never see tools as a cost of a project, because generally you do get a lot of use out of them. But anyway, so how I did this was I went on YouTube and I typed in, you know, how to do repairs on a F-150 brake repairs, and I got a lot of different selections. So I went through some of them, and there were some that were better than others. The one that I looked at, and for the life of me, I can't remember the name of the channel right now. I think it's a Ford Tech Macu Loco or something like that. But anyway, I watched that, and the guy owns a auto shop down in Chicago, and real professional job as far as the video goes, and then also a professional job of explaining it. And that was real simple. And I used his for changing out the brake, the rear pads and rotors. And there were also helpful hints, things that you might not get out of a regular video. So there was additional videos I watched also, like common mistakes for changing out pads and rotors. But anyway, I did a very good job. And there was another one that I saw where the guy had like a GoPro on his head, and he was shaking his head around looking at Tourette's or something like that. So it was shakier than the Blair Witch Project. But it gave me a general idea. But the thing is, the little bit of time that I spent on YouTube, I learned more than I learned an entire semester in auto shop class. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BipCot NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha, Biptunia.com.
I'm joined by Nick, my foreman of the Bitcoin mines, running that child labor ragged.
Mm-hmm. We've got a whip.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, if Fedcoin goes jingle, jingle, jingle in your pocket, what sound does Bitcoin make in your pocket? Does it sound like R2-D2? But anyway, back to the YouTube break job story. So, as I mentioned, this was nothing like putting together a house. But when you look at the number of things that you can find on YouTube, it's just really unbelievable. As a new homeowner, I'm doing stuff that I haven't done before, or haven't done in a very, very, very long time, maybe 20 years or more. And I've just found the value of the different tutorials on there to be amazing. There's a lot of times that a manufacturer will have a how-to video, and it makes it a lot easier than reading the instructions that normally come with an item. Like I did a screen door, and the instructions for it were pretty poor, and it with the drawings in there, it was difficult for me to really comprehend where they're coming from. But by watching a YouTube video of the company, I was able to see, okay, so that's what they mean. All right. And it made a lot more sense to me. And you've used YouTube for a number of things, right?
Yeah. From car stuff to building a fence. A lot of stuff I found. My dad's pretty skilled. He's an engineer, and he's worked on cars, so he knows a lot of stuff. But there's also a lot of stuff that he doesn't know, and there's so much stuff that I don't know getting into farming. And YouTube has been very helpful at just learning, you know, anything from running a business to changing the brakes on the car.
Yeah. Well, what's nice about it is, one, I cut my cost in half, and yeah, it took a fair amount of time to do this, but the next time I have to do a brake job, which probably won't be too far in the future, maybe it'll be helping a friend out. But the next time I have to do it, I'll be a lot more familiar with it. It'll probably go a bit quicker. I noticed the first one that I did, because I was going back and checking and double checking stuff, because like I said, it's been 10 years since I've even looked at brakes, let alone, you know, really got in there and done a brake job by myself. I think the last time that I did a brake job by myself was maybe in the 80s.
Wow.
So, that's quite a long time ago. And I was trying to go out of a textbook, which was just absolutely horrible. But anyway, mm-hmm. There's some really good comments on here. One person pointed out the money that I saved, and yeah, that's nice. Eric says, did the same thing 10 days ago for a fan clutch and serpentine belt. The tech and YouTube were liberating and saved me buku money. Yeah. Liz says that she's used YouTube to repair her mother's dryer, her oven, and install a ceiling fan.
Wow.
James Babb says he's going to miss me he's going to miss my memes if I die because I did a bad brake job. But maybe I'll put a tutorial on YouTube of how to make memes. But anyway, Phoebe, her granddaughter is a YouTube how-to freak, and she comes up with all kinds of different stuff. Phoebe has a potty mouth. But anyway, so her granddaughter learns a lot of stuff off of YouTube, and it appears that she put some stuff on there too. Sarah says that she's learned a lot about soap design and techniques, and has increased her skill and by default her income because she makes soap for a living. Dave says he took his SUV for the check engine light, and the mechanic says you need a new canister vent valve and a mass airflow sensor. That'll be $820. He hopped online. The two parts together cost around $200, and according to YouTube, are about an hour's worth of work. What's worse, CRC makes a can of, you guessed it, mass airflow sensor cleaner for less than $10 a can. He's got another story about a catalytic converter and another helpful hint. So, there's a lot of stuff on there, and I'm looking for, there's one comment that really struck me. Oh, yeah, Leah. She says, my husband works on heavy equipment, and YouTube has saved his life more than once. No matter how knowledgeable you may be, there is always something you've never done before. Intelligence isn't about knowing everything. It's about knowing how to find answers to what you don't know. And that is probably the best comment that I can see on this post, or just in conversations about this sort of thing. Knowledge is about knowing where to find the answers when you don't know something.
That's a really cool definition. I've never heard that. I really like that.
Yeah. Well, intelligence is about knowing it, not knowledge. So, sure. But yeah, it's rather philosophical there. But yeah, if you don't know the answer and you don't know how to find the answer, then you're just going to be winding up paying some mechanic to do something that you can use a can of spray cleaner for, or you're going to have some politician solving your problem that he probably created in the first place.
Exactly. The reason why I got into repairing my own car and using YouTube and learning the manuals as best as I could is because I wanted to be able to, partly I just wanted to brag and say I've done it, but I also wanted to learn so that I could be more independent, so that if it came down to it, yeah, I've got enough manuals and now I have the internet. I don't even need the manuals, I guess, for my Jeep, that I can pretty much figure out anything that goes wrong, and I don't have to go out to a mechanic. I have had some issues like that. I have had the research, or I had to reach out to some folks, mechanics that come out. But even then, you know, I'm paying them to teach me. I don't ever try to bring my car in because I want to learn. Because I think why not? Because it's going to save money, and it's a great skill. Because sometimes you're, at least where I'm at, you know, I get break down and I don't have cell service, and I'm going to have to figure out what's going on my own, right? So you have to be self-reliant, and YouTube has given there's no excuse now. It's like, it's free and it's right there. You're already on it, probably.
I think I talked about this last week or a couple weeks ago, but in this day and age, with all the information that's available to you, stupid isn't a choice. Stupid is an accomplishment, because it's so easy to get information. You have to actually work hard to stay ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people make it look easy, but it does take hard work to stay that ignorant. Now, here's the beautiful thing about this. How did YouTube get the content that it has?
Oh, just random people uploading it, right?
Right. It doesn't cost you anything to use YouTube. And you can sign up for, I think it's called YouTube Red. It'll take out the commercials, and you'll get some other bells and whistles with it. But I'm signing up for, YouTube doesn't cost you anything. It's paid for through advertisements. Now, I will say this. If you're pulling up YouTube to learn how to do CPR, and you got somebody that's in need of CPR right there, and it says, your video will start after this advertisement, that's not a good thing. But so maybe you should sign up for YouTube Red. But here's the thing. There was no central planner that directed all these content producers to make these videos and post them on YouTube. This is manufacturers of screen doors and entryway doors. It's manufacturers of all these different items. And by putting this up there, they make it easier for people to decide if they want their products. Because if they have to assemble a product and it's hard to assemble, that's a deal breaker for many people. So you have manufacturers putting up videos. You have service providers that maybe they're going to sell an additional product. Maybe they're going to sell you the parts because they've shown you how to do it. Or maybe the guy that I was talking about that has a YouTube channel that I watched to get this, maybe people are going to say, you know what, I just don't have the tools for that, and I'm going to take my car down to this guy because he seems pretty knowledgeable and honest. So there's a way to get money. There was no central planners saying, you make a video about this, you make a video about that. No, it was a bunch of people that came together on their own and created this wonderful network of knowledge and information.
Yeah, decentralization, right?
Yeah, which leads into the next topic. We're going to talk about some TV shows here and how it relates to some of the real life stories. The one that I want to talk about, it's a new show on CBS. It's just started this year. It's called The Wisdom of the Crowd. And when I first heard the title, I'm like, oh my God. I thought back to I thought to H.L. Mencken saying that democracy is the collective wisdom, it relies upon the collective wisdom of individual ignorance. So I was automatically suspicious of it when I first heard it, but it's a pretty decent show. I don't watch a whole lot of TV shows, but this is one of them. I pull it up on the CBS app and I cast it to my TV, which, by the way, you're 18 still? You haven't turned 19 yet?
No, I'm 19, yeah.
Okay. I'm 47, so I grew up, when I was a kid, I was a remote control. I had to get up and go over and change the channel and hit the volume. And when you turn the TV on, you had to wait a couple minutes for it to warm up. And stuff that you read about in the history books, or maybe your dad told you about it. But the fact that I can flick my phone and put something on the TV on demand like that is really changed things around from how it was when I grew up. My first TV. Like, having a TV in my room was a black and white, and it had rabbit ears on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Didn't know you were that old, Lou.
Shut up, Nick.
I don't think I've ever seen a black and white TV.
Shut up, Nick. You're going to lose that extra Satoshi per hour. But anyway, so this TV show, it stars the two big-name actors in there are Jeremy Piven, and Richard T. Jones. Jeremy Piven plays this Mark Zuckerberg type of internet social media guru, and he starts up a Facebook or Twitter type website called AllSourcer, and he has this hope of, at least according to the show, he has this hope of bringing people together and exchange of ideas and civil conversation and stuff like that. And one of the things that they focus on is particularly the political division, so the left versus right and everything else. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back.
Sounds interesting.
It is.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other Chrome robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android worms.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Nick, and we're talking about a TV show called Wisdom of the Crowd. As I was mentioning before we went to break, it stars Jeremy Piven and Richard T. Jones. Jeremy Piven plays a internet guy, and he creates a social media network, and one of the big complaints is about how people are divided, and it really shows the political divide between like the Trumpers, the chumps for Trump, and the burn victims, and of course the Hillary bots. But anyway, one of the things that he does, and it's in the very first episode, is he leaves the company and he starts up a new one. It's called Sophie, and the whole purpose of this is it's a crowdsourced crime solving website. The original mission of this is the guy's daughter gets killed. By the way, Richard Jones plays the San Francisco homicide detective. But anyway, in this show, Jeremy Piven's daughter is murdered, and a guy is convicted, but he doesn't believe that this guy is the person. So in the first season, it's not done so far. I don't know when it's going to happen, but the website is set up to find the real killer, and this hasn't happened yet, and they keep getting clues and everything. But what they're doing is they're analyzing stuff through social media. They're crowdsourcing it, and they have their viewers that are looking at this information. They're chasing down leads and everything else, and this guy expects that his daughter's killer is gonna be found. But there's a little hiccup. There's a little something else that happens in there. The users wind up getting wind of other crimes, and they start solving those. And the guy's a little bit perturbed at first because he wants to solve his daughter's murder, but here he sees this platform that's being used to solve all sorts of murders. What do you think so far, Nick?
That sounds really exciting. I think that... Wow. I don't know. I've never heard of it. Like, it just... It sounds really new to me. Like, I'm pretty intrigued. I kind of want to watch this.
Yeah. Well, it's not the typical cop show. And what's really interesting is... There's a lot of stories I ripped from the headlines. One in particular that sticks out to me is there's this alt-right white nationalist from White Trashistan that gets killed. And they're one of the things that I thought of when I first heard the premise of the show, like watching the first episode, I'm like, okay, what about bias? So anyway, what happens is they have a bias filter that goes through and it eliminates like the hardcore biased votes or opinions on there. So they kind of get the extreme right and left out of there. They remove that and they work with that information. But it's really interesting because they'll get information, and it's not just a matter of a bunch of people throwing stuff up like on Facebook and it just turns into a giant troll fest. So there is some moderation of what's going on in there, which is one of the things that I thought, okay, all right, this is going to make a lot more sense. But anyway, it's really interesting in how it works because they go and they eliminate a bunch of stuff. They'll have people analyzing different photographs. They'll have people combing through social media photo uploads of like certain events, which is a little bit on the creepy side. And I think police departments are already doing this sort of thing, looking at different events and everything, and finding out who was there. I think it's usually for crime, so-called crime fighting, but it might also be for keeping tabs on people. One of my problems with the show is it does kind of normalize this. They do work with the San Francisco Police Department, and of course the police department is very, very, they're not receptive. They're very opposed to the ideas like, we're cops, we're the thin blue line, we don't need these nerds running around doing stuff. And they wind up forging an uneasy alliance and partnership that tends to warm over time. But it's a very interesting show, and it looks at the theory of crowdsourcing for crime fighting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So maybe that'll be your homework assignment is check it out.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that. That's a good homework assignment.
And then write a TV show report about it. But anyway, we'll be back in the second hour. Worms.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. This is Lou, and I'm joined by young Nick. Welcome back, Nick. You are back, right?
I am back. I'm here. Yeah.
Worms. So, we ended the last segment of the first hour talking about crowdsourcing, and I wanted to mention Cell 411. Are you familiar with Cell 411, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, what do you know about it?
What do I know about it? Yeah,
give us your book report. Give us your book report right now.
All I know about Cell 411 is that it's a way that you can send out to your group of people. I don't know how this works because I have the app, but I've never used it. But you can send out alerts and let people know where you're at, what's happening to you, and I think you can stream video. But I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, you can stream video and store it on a secure server, the Cell 411 server. That way you don't have to worry about the cops getting your phone and deleting your footage.
Yeah.
But yes, you can also set up networks, kind of like the old MCI circle, something else as before your time. You can set up a network of friends to be your emergency responders rather than waiting for the cops to come in and do it.
Yeah, I think that's really useful. And yeah, luckily I just haven't been in a situation where I would be able to use it, but in a situation where you can't trust the authorities, which I think is always, it's mm-hmm. really nice to have a group of people that can have your back. And Cell 411, that's a really good app to use to use that strategy.
I live in a rural area. Even in town is pretty rural. So I live outside of town, and the area that I live in order to get 80 people, they combined with another town.
To get 80 people.
Yeah. It's maybe bigger than Hooterville, but smaller than Pixley. That's something else. That's before your time. But anyway. You remember Green Acres? You've heard about that?
I've heard of Green Acres, yeah.
Okay. But anyway, my neighborhood, there's no local police department, so if you need law enforcement to come out there, not that you ever do, you have to rely on the county sheriff, and the county sheriff's office is a good 15 minutes away.
Wow, yeah.
So it would be better in like the area that I'm in like the residential area where they got like a handful of houses together. It would be better off for me and my neighbors to be on a network to where if there's an emergency, we can rely on each other rather than hoping and praying that the cops or somebody else is going to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
And the good news is the ambulance service is about maybe 4 miles away. Maybe five, yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I'm in the same situation out here. The nearest town is 20 minutes, and that's where the local cops would be. And I'm like in an unfortunate spot because I'm on the end of a county, and it's kind of a weird corner to get to in Polk County where we're at. So the Polk County Sheriff, they hardly come out here. And the closest one would be Benton County, but I don't know. I don't think they would respond out here because we're over the county line, and so we just haven't had situations where that happens. But I do wonder, because I think it would be much more useful to people around us if we could do that. But at the same time, while we don't have Cell 411 and maybe we aren't as connected as would be necessary if you were in a real emergency. We do have a decent, a little bit of a, it's a community enough that, you know, we're looking out for each other. And if something was happening at somebody's house, it's pretty clear. I don't know if they would come over if the cops were here, but if somebody was, you know, I've had this happen and I don't think I've ever done this myself, but if somebody's on the property, you know, we've had people be like, hey, what are you doing here? And make sure that people stay off. So that's, you know, it's good to have that kind of community, but I do think that we might be at a disadvantage because we don't have the, you know, it's not as quick because I got to find I don't always have these phone numbers memorized. I got to go to the phone book and look up, oh, I got to call the guy down the road because, you know, who knows. But cell 411 would be a nice service to use.
Yeah, my neighbors have a tendency to look out for each other. As a matter of fact, one of my neighbors, the guy across the street in Kitty Corner, some friends came over when I was gone, and I saw him a couple days later. He says, yeah, I saw your friends when they got here. And I'm like, well, how'd you know that they were my friends? He says, oh, they're dirty hippies. If they were clean cut, I would have chased them off. But anyway, so I want to talk about another television show, and this is going to go back to before your time, because you are the designated kid of the show. It's called The Americans. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Okay. What do you know about it?
I know that it's about two Russian spies who I don't know the details, but I know that it's a married couple, and that they're Russian spies. And that's it. That's all I know about it.
Yeah. It's the show is on FX, but it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know about Netflix. I watch it on Prime. But the story is, and this takes place in Cold War America, just outside of Washington, D.C., so like Falls Church, Virginia, something like that. And the legend was always that the Soviet Union had these little cities that were made up to look like American cities, and they would use these as training grounds to train agents, and they would get these agents at a very young age, teach them English, they'd lose their accent, so they could blend into the American population, and they would send them over as sleepers, and they would be backstopped with a pretty good legend, meaning a background, a life story, and everything else. And one of the things that they talk about in the show a couple seasons in, because this couple has kids, is that the goal is for the offspring of these couples to wind up becoming spies for the Soviet Union later on. But the thing is that the kids don't know what their parents do until they become almost adults. So the hope is by having somebody that's born there and creating a legend of sorts that they'll be able to get in and infiltrate these different agencies where there will be heavier background checks. So the spies that they deploy won't be able to infiltrate because they just won't have they won't be able to get through the background checks. But because it's before the time of the internet and everybody having computers, I imagine that the capability of doing the background checks was a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know, a lot of things that, like, obviously being a spy for the Russians, like, I don't know, it's kind of interesting having the kids there. That sounds like an interesting premise.
Yeah, because they are going, they are parents, but, and they also have a business, and that's how they fund their operations is through this business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they got business to run, they got two kids to raise, they've got social gatherings in the neighborhood. The guy that lives across the street from them is an FBI agent, and he works in the counterterrorism department, and his job is to keep an eye on the Soviet embassy and the employees there. So he has no ideas that he has illegals living across the street from him. And by illegals, it's the ones that aren't listed as official positions. Like, what'll happen is when Americans are assigned to an embassy overseas, they'll be listed as like the press attaché or commerce attaché, and just all these different things, and they'll be covered as State Department employees, but one of them's going to be the chief of station, and then you're going to have operatives, and then you have these things called NOCs, or illegals, non-official cover, and those are the ones that they can't just whip out their passport, say diplomatic immunity, and use their get out of jail free card. Yeah. But so these people are very illegal, you know, because they were smuggled into the country and they assumed roles as American citizens. And it's really interesting to watch it as they're juggling all these different things. The very first season, it starts when right after Reagan is inaugurated, and I don't know how much you know about the Reagan years, but that was a ramping up of the Cold War. If you look at probably after Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis, things had mellowed out a fair amount. I mean, there was hostility, but wasn't quite so open. And when Reagan came in, it really ramped up, particularly with the arms race. And there was a lot of provocative subject matter or dialogue in there. Mm-hmm. One of the things, and they just showed this in this recent season, they talked about they played a quote of one of his press conferences, and he said a joke. He says, "I've just signed out legislation that outlaws the Soviet Union. The bombing starts in 5 minutes." And when the Soviets had been monitoring that, and they heard that, they went on full alert, and a lot of the NATO countries went on full alert because they figured, okay, it's wartime, and that was just Reagan cracking a joke. But so you have Reagan taking office, and things get really tense, and then Reagan gets shot, and the Soviets are wondering what in the happy hellwings going on, if it's a coup against Reagan. The Americans are wondering what in the happy hellwings going on. Were the Soviets behind this? And it just really, really goes wild. You can see to where it could come to the brink of another war or another Cuban Missile Crisis, because nobody knows what's going on, and everybody's just operating under the assumption that everybody else is doing the wrong thing.
Wow, that's interesting. And I don't remember who shot Reagan.
John Hinckley.
Yeah, and he wasn't involved with the Russians at all, right?
No. There's allegations that he was involved with the Bush family, but anyway.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But yeah, it was very interesting what happened, and we'll be back to talk about this a little bit more.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Nick. Welcome back, everybody. And we're talking about the TV show The Americans. And it's really interesting because I grew up in the Cold War era. I was born in 1970, so 1981 when Reagan took office, I was in elementary school. I was in elementary school at the time, and I had considered Reagan to be my first president because he was the first one that I was really aware of. I didn't know anything about, didn't know much about Jimmy Carter, didn't really know anything, didn't know about Ford. Nixon was really gone by the time I was aware of anything. just because of my age. But I remember the election in 1980. They made a big stink about it in the government schools, of course, because religious schools teach religion, trade schools teach trade, and government schools teach government. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I remember that, and I remember the rhetoric, and I will say one thing about Reagan. Even though his presidency turned out to be completely fraudulent, and the Reagan legend is more mythology than anything else, he was the moniker of the great communicator was definitely true. He was the type of person that did inspire confidence in people. Maybe it was the optimism. Maybe it was he was just a, you know, what made a great used car salesman. I don't really know specifically what it was and what appealed to people, but he had that very friendly air about him. And I, to this day, I still like listening to his words. Unfortunately, his actions completely went against his rhetoric. It turned out to be the exact opposite of it. But yeah, so there's a lot of animosity between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. And strangely enough, growing up, having heard the Evil Empire speech and everything else, and all the anti-Soviet, anti-Russian, anti-communist talk, you know, I just assumed, okay, well, these people must be bad because my government wouldn't tell me the wrong thing, would they? But anyway, I really believe that Russians were evil until I actually met Russians. And it's like, hey, these people aren't so bad. Boy, do they drink. So, but anyway, in the first season, it's really amazing because when you grow up in the Cold War era and you're watching a show about, you know, the enemy or the former enemy, it's like, wow, how do I let these people weasel their way into my heart and learn to appreciate their characters? And if you remember the TV series The Wire on HBO, do you remember that?
Yeah, I never watched it, but I do remember it.
Okay. One of the things that they did, it was a very realistic look at the war on drugs, a.k.a. No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind. And they showed the drug dealers, who are usually the Satan-worshipping lizard people, the enemies of all of humanity. They showed them going through the regular trials and tribulations that everybody else experiences in life. They've got kids to raise. Kids are getting in trouble, or they're doing this or doing that. You got Stringer Bell, who's one of the main characters. He's going to school to learn business administration so he can turn the street game into more of a professional business, and so he can launder money and do all these different things and kind of get away from the rough and tumble street life of it. But anyway, so. It's really interesting. You're watching this family going through their family stuff, and it's like, hey, I can relate to them, which kind of can bring you to the conclusion of, hey, maybe they're not that different from us after all. But they do all their little different spy things, and you find yourself kind of cheering for them and cheering against the FBI, because the FBI does a lot of bumbling, scumbaggery stuff. But the most recent season, I binge-watched it the other day when the weather was really crappy. They were one of the main characters who worked in the Soviet embassy. He gets transferred back to Moscow, and he's a KGB agent, but he's covered under science and technology. And that was his specialty, was science and technology. But anyway, he's been sent back, and because his father is the Minister of Transportation, he's considered to be a good party member and everything else. And he gets assigned to this department that's investigating fraud and corruption in the food system. If you know anything about Soviet history, bread lines were commonplace, and there were always shortages. So, and we'll talk about why when we get back.
Thanks.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends, we are back. This is Lou and Nick.
Yes.
And we are talking about the FX show The Americans. In the most recent season, as I mentioned before, I binge watched it not too long ago when the weather was really cruddy. And this season one of the main characters gets sent back to Moscow to investigate corruption in the food system. And it's really interesting because this becomes a central theme of it. And they're talking about what's the best way to describe it? One, socialism, and this isn't something that comes up, at least not too much. It doesn't come up in the Russian section of the show. But with socialism, food shortages are inherent to the system. It goes hand in hand, like police and brutality. And they don't explain that socialism is a problem. And of course, the party loyalists, the socialists, they'll deny all day long that that's a problem. I mean, heck, that can't be the problem. The problem must be corruption. The problem must be sabotage. And anybody that does not go along with the system, and anybody that doesn't engage in the socialism, anybody that goes outside the socialistic system to engage in the black market, aka creeping capitalism, is sabotaging the system, and that is the cause of all the problems. And the parallel in thought between the Soviets and Americans is really amazing, because obviously in both places, the problem is people aren't patriotic enough to go along with the system. There's just not enough obedience to government. Yes, Republicans, I'm talking about you, because you sound just like Soviet hardliners in that regard. Not enough patriotism, not enough obedience. But so this guy gets sent out to do these investigations, and he goes out and he questions these different store owners, and goes through the chain of the centralized food distribution system. And one person says, of course there's payoffs. This is how it works. It's the only way that it can work. And by doing these payoffs, I'm able to make sure that the customers here have something to eat. And of course, they got rationing. And they showed some old footage from the 80s of people going into grocery stores, and there's hardly anything in there. They're not even unloading the boxes of stuff. People are just going and grabbing stuff out of the boxes and putting it in their shopping carts, because they don't even have time to unload it and put it on the shelves. But the shelves are bare. And this woman says, this is how it works. This is how you get the food, because this is the way the system is set up. So she doesn't go in to explain that socialism is a problem, but enough people tell this guy, that this investigator, that I think the wheels start turning just a little bit. But the interesting plot twist to this is that other units of the KGB come to visit him, and they start questioning him about all these different, about his time in America and relationships that he had with different people and everything else. And it's really implied that because the corruption goes so high up, and they tell him when he first gets the assignment that some of the people that he'll be investigating have been to his family's house for dinner, because his father is a cabinet minister. He says, they say, some of the people that come here, or some of the people that have been to your home for dinner will be under investigation here. And it makes me wonder if this, if his being investigated is retaliatory. They don't come right out and say it, but it's certainly implied. So yeah. I guess it would be a matter of, how can I put it? The fox doesn't want to be investigated for what he did in the hen house. And the fox doesn't want the other fox to investigate him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. He wants to keep taking what he's been taking from the fox house.
Yeah.
From the chicken house, sorry.
Yeah. And quite frankly, if it wasn't for the black and gray markets, the Soviet Union would have collapsed a long, long, long time before that it did. And that's the only thing that kept the starvation to the levels that it was the black and gray markets. But the thing is, rather than admitting that socialism was a problem, they doubled down on stupidity and they tried to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different outcome. So they expected socialism to work finally. But more importantly, and I'm going to use another Einstein quote here, they used the same thinking to attempt to solve their problems that they used to create the problems. They used the same thinking to try and solve the problem that they used to create the problem, and that was clamping down on things. And it's really interesting because people get arrested and they get sent to gulag and everything else, and they're getting, you know, some of them are going to get trials, some of them are just going to get sent to gulag because, well, they must be guilty. They wouldn't have been arrested if they weren't. And it's really amazing that people have this idea that you can clamp down on stuff and it's going to get people to stop. Dissidents were rounded up, taken to gulag, they were executed. Some of them didn't make it to gulag, some of them were just executed in the streets. But all this horrible brutality that was used against people that just didn't want a communism like everybody else did. They wanted to do things differently, or heaven forbid they wanted to be free. With all the clamping down that has been done, with all the violence that was used, you would think that if clamping down was going to stop dissidents, that it would have happened like the first 1,000 times that they did it. But no, it didn't.
Yeah, because it didn't work.
No, but people always have this idea. Okay, we're going to do this. It's like the surge in Iraq and Afghanistan. They said, okay, yeah, we're going to do a surge, and they said that there were results, but ultimately, Iraq is still a failed state that was toppled by a foreign government, and now it's still going in sectarian violence. Afghanistan has still never been under control. And the only place that's under control is Kabul, and that's pretty much only in the daytime.
Yeah.
So what exactly has the surge accomplished? Nothing.
Yeah.
What is all the cracking down on drugs in Detroit done? Detroit's still a Schumer hole. It's still the failed state project. Baltimore, still a failed state project. New York City, still a failed state project. All this clamping down on the drug trade still goes. But what do people do? What do politicians do? They keep going back to the same things that didn't work before. And to top it off, they try to use the thinking to solve their problems that was used to create their problems. Which brings us to a new story. And this takes place in Chicago. It's from the Chicago Tribune, and I believe it's the commissioner there, Cook County Commissioner, wants to bring in the UN to solve Chicago genocide.
Yeah.
They want to bring in the UN troops, peacekeeping troops, to solve the Chicago genocide.
Is that what they're calling it? Is it quite a genocide? That seems.
Yeah, it's certainly hyperbolic. But here's the thing. It's really interesting when I heard this. And the article goes, President Donald Trump's implicit threat to put the National Guard on the streets of Chicago to tackle the city's violence problem attracted widespread ridicule earlier this year. But if the soldiers were instead wearing the sky blue helmets of United Nations peacekeepers, there might not be such a problem, according to Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin, who flew to New York on Thursday to discuss what he described as a quiet genocide in Chicago's black community with the UN's Assistant Secretary General for Peacebuilding Support, Oscar Fernandez Taranco. The United Nations has a track record of protecting minority populations. That's BS, Boykin told Inc. before his meeting. There was a tribal warfare between the Tutsis and the Hutus in Africa, and they deployed peacekeeping troops there to help save those populations and reduce the bloodshed. We have to do something. Black people in Chicago make up 30% of the population, but 80% of those are killed by gun violence. Asked how that might differ from sending in the National Guard, Boykin said, the difference is I'm not so sure that the National Guard is so used to peacekeeping and a peacekeeping role. The UN is trained in this. What exactly are they going to do in a peacekeeping role? This is absolute nonsense. The UN troops, they're either going to stand around and hope that their presence causes people to behave, which it won't. Or they're going to go door to door, and they're going to look for people. They're going to gather intelligence. They're going to grab people up, take them off to Gulag, or whatever. And I mean, they're not going to do anything different than what National Guard troops would do. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense to me why we would. Why would you bring in a people? I guess I've read this article, and I see the argument. I see where he's coming from as a person who likes government, but it doesn't make sense to
That's
me.
A key Why thing. Would
you? Yeah, yeah. Like I get, like if you think government is the good thing, yeah, bring in the biggest one. Yeah. You know,
do the same thing over and over again and expect a different outcome, and use the same line of thinking that you use to create the problems. Because that's what this is. What they have to ask is, if there is so much violence in the black community, why? What caused it? Is it a matter of everybody was well-behaved and then all of a sudden, for no reason whatsoever, they just lost their mind and started shooting each other? I don't know. Probably not. Does history have Does Chicago have a history of violence at any other time? You know, mass violence is way beyond their normal or way beyond the other normals. Let's see now. When did that ever happen? Oh, gee, was that maybe during Prohibition?
Yeah. Yeah.
Prohibition of alcohol, when the murder rate doubled, when all the other crime rates went sky high. Matter of fact, the record number of cops murdered in a year was during Prohibition of alcohol. Gee, I wonder if that may have something to do with it. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. A little bit of information, a little housekeeping item here. I mentioned this much earlier on. There will be no Freedom Fiends Digest next week. They'll be gone for a week, and they'll be back the following week. So then you'll be able to get your short version, your Cliff Notes version of Freedom Fiends in the Fiend Digest. So we're talking about the idea of bringing UN troops into Chicago to solve the genocide problem. And as we went into the break last segment, the question that nobody seems to be asking or answering for that matter is, why does Chicago have such a high homicide rate? Why do all of these different places have such a high homicide rate? And nobody is considering possibly that it could be that prohibition, meaning the current prohibition, meaning the war on drugs, has created an illicit market. I know I've said this 20 times this year on the show, at least. But the war on drugs, no cartel or police agency left behind, creates an illicit market which incentivizes the use of violence to protect existing territory and gain new territory. If you look at, and it's easy to see Detroit in this light, having lived there. I imagine Chicago is quite the same way from what I know about Chicago. But the local government really cracks down on business in these places, particularly businesses that haven't paid tribute, if you know what I mean. So you have an economic situation where, and the economy is really stifled. If you can't get into a regular approved job, then your only choice is to go with a irregular unapproved job. And a lot of what is considered crime is an illicit market created by prohibitions against capitalism. So it's not necessarily that people are evil there, but violence has been incentivized. And just as we talked about with the surges in Iraq and Afghanistan, going in and clamping down again is not going to do anything. If the Soviet Union and Red China couldn't get rid of dissidents by clamping down and sending them to gulags and murdering over 120 million of them just between those two countries in the 20th century alone, then how do you think you're going to get people to quit dealing drugs? How do you think you're going to get people to quit dealing in the black and gray market, particularly when that's their only way of making a living? So yeah. What exactly are they expecting to accomplish here by going in and using more violence, by using more government prohibition to solve the problem that was created by government violence and government prohibition?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't make sense.
No, none whatsoever.
The situation gets rid of violence.
Yeah.
That's not how addition works, bud.
Yeah. And going back to that TV show, The Americans, one of the interesting stories was there was in the last season, the most recent season, there was a Soviet defector who worked in the Department of not having enough agriculture. He defected and came to America, and he was working with the American Department of Agriculture. And there was a thought that he was going to be helping to create like a super pest that would decimate the Soviet grain crop. It turns out that they were working on what would be early GMOs in hopes of having pest-resistant crops. But anyway, it's funny because the family, the Soviet spies, their job is to keep an eye on this guy and find out what he's doing, what he's up to, and everything. And he doesn't stop talking about how horrible things are in the Soviet Union. He's talking about how horrible the bread lines are, how horrible it is that people are starving, that they don't have enough food. And what's really interesting is the couple, they have another agent that's playing their kid, that's playing it's a Vietnamese kid, and he's playing their adopted son. And it's really funny because as he's complaining about starvation, the adopted son keeps calling him a traitor, and not to his face, but in side discussion, saying he's a traitor who hates his country because he's pointing out how horrible things are. And it goes back to what I talked about last week. It's the argumentum ergo decido. So that's the traitor's critic fallacy, where if somebody points out something that is bad, he's a traitor to his country, he hates his country, he needs to move to Somalia because he's pointing out something that is probably true. And that's another area where Americans and Soviets have something in common. They can't handle criticism. They can't handle the truth. Anyway, thanks for coming on tonight, Nick. It's always a pleasure.